Yes, thank you. Let me first thank you too for inviting JPEG Committee to give a presentation here at the conference. I'm the victim who can present our current work, but I do this with a lot of pleasure. And actually, following the discussions that took place already today, there are quite a lot of issues that are currently also on the table within the JPEG Committee, and I've tried to change my presentation a little bit so that I can address those issues so that we can have more interaction. Because I'm not only here to educate you about what is the status of current standardization processes in JPEG, you should also educate me about what the needs are from your community so that we can take care of those in our future standards. So this is rather as a kind of very interactive activity in the coming hour. So my presentation is split into two. So I will first give you an overview about where we are with current standards. I'll try to go quite quickly through it. Then Andrea will translate it to the markets, give the business perspective, and then I will move into what are the new things we're working on, what are the challenges there, and actually the disruptive is in my title, he's more in the direction of that topic. Okay, so this is of course, kicking in an open door that digitization is a fact in photography markets. So we have seen this transition some time ago. This was quite disruptive. Some businesses have disappeared, other ones popped up. And we see nowadays that quite a lot of images are being produced in digital format. So if we count about 3 billion pictures a day that are uploaded on social media, typically in JPEG format, and about 400 billion pictures produced a year by digital cameras. So that's quite a big market. Now, what we observe too is when we look at the new imaging modalities that are starting to pop up, that an image is not going to be anymore a flat 2D entity as we know it right now. So it's going to become a volume. If you think about planoptic cameras and so forth, there are other types of imaging modalities that are going to pop up. And this is also going to influence significantly, I think, digital imaging markets. And so I think you as a community, you should be also aware of this, that this evolution could also have an as big impact on your business as the analog to digital transition had a number of years ago and still has. So I will try to address some of those challenges later on in the talk. And maybe first of all, it's maybe also good to situate the JPEG Committee. The JPEG Committee, where JPEG stands for Joint Photographic Experts Group, is actually a committee that links actually three standardization bodies, being ISO, the International Standardization Organization, IEC, the International Electrotechnical Committee, and then ITUT. Most of the standards we develop are actually jointly published by ISO, IEC, and on the other side, ITUT. Now, what's very important, and it has been addressed today already a few times, so I don't have to dwell too much on it, standardization is assuring interoperability, and that's something you should never forget as a standardization body, that is your first goal, taking care of interoperability, such that you can interface, in this particular example, a number of electricity plugs. Now, on the other hand, interoperability is nice, but it shouldn't get too bulky either. So we were talking about this earlier today. I think you should take care that you have very small Lego blocks, which you can nicely fit together. But once those Lego blocks get too large, you get a lot of problems, and often standards are not adopted. And so JPEG committee, but also the MPEG committee and other bodies too, have experienced this in the past when they made something that was too bulky. It was not adopted by the market because it was too complex and so forth. So you should really identify the right problems to solve and define standards that are solving that particular issue and not make something that is all-encompassing because then probably it will not fly. So that's quite an important thing to take into mind when designing standards. Okay, so what have we been developing over the years, actually, and over the last 20 years as a standardization body? Of course, our biggest success story is JPEG, but as you can see, quite a number of other standards have been developed in the meanwhile. And I'm not sure whether all of those are known by you. I'm going to address some of them. Some of them I will skip in view of time. But maybe this one is an interesting one to mention, JPEG-LS. It has known, actually, very little adoption. While for lossless compression of images, it is still one of the best technologies which is around, which is very low in terms of complexity and so forth. But it hasn't been adopted, strangely enough. But because it would have been an ideal format to use as a RAW format, for example, in digital cameras, but In medical imaging, sometimes this standard is being used. And there are a few other ones, but I will address them later on in my talk. Okay, so JPEG standards itself, as I mentioned before already in the introduction, and as you are well aware of, it's well adopted. But one of the interesting things you see in this graph here, because this is actually the number of images being shared on social media over the last years, and these are all typically all JPEG images. You can see this has been growing incredibly. But what is also interesting to see when you observe this graph here is that, like, Facebook didn't grow that much anymore over the last year. It stayed quite stable. And so the services where actually there was a big run were those services where actually privacy was respected. So where you could upload images, but where that images was deleted after a while, or only your immediate contacts had access to the image and only could consume it once. And so this is a graph that nicely illustrates that in the user community, there is a big sensitivity related to privacy issues, that they don't like to share everything on the social media, but to keep it contained. And so this was also one of the reasons for the JPEG committee to move into an activity called JPEG Privacy, which I will address later on. Another standard, I think this is the second most successful standard launched by the committee, JPEG 2000. It didn't hit really the consumer market as intended, and we can have a discussion on this, why this was the case. There were a number of IPR issues related to the technology or concerns, not really issues, concerns. There was a perceived high complexity and so forth, and so this all delayed a bit the introduction of the standard. But at the same time, what happened too was that JPEG, it was the same period, JPEG became very popular. And the whole imaging ecosystem, the end-to-end chain, adopted that technology. And so all products have been built on top of that. And so then it's not so easy to replace such a technology by yet another technology, which might be offering better rate distortion performance, more functionality, and so forth. I mean, the whole ecosystem is supporting another standard. So that's one of the things we're struggling with as a committee. If I'm not struggling, we have been struggling with. And we have realized that actually it would be a much better idea to maintain better our JPEG technology, our most successful product, as a standardization body. And that's actually what's happening right now. So that's what we were working on. Although the other end, JPEG 2000 has been successful, especially in professional markets where you're not really confronted with this, with all the constraints of a huge end-to-end system that has to be supported. And if you think, for example, digital cinema, medical imaging, and so forth, there the adoption of JPEG 2000 was quite successful. It's a whole framework. I'm not going to go into the details of this framework now, but as you can see, it's not only a decoding technology as such. There are many extensions related to security. There was already security IPR extensions for this standard defined, wireless transmission, a whole number of file formats, so forth, a volumetric extension for volumetric medical data, and so on. Then a number of years ago, the committee also defined or standardized the JPEG XR technology, which was originally a technology which was embedded in Windows. So it was a Microsoft technology called HD Photo. And so this was a kind of technology that could bridge the gap actually between the low complexity, low performance behavior, between brackets of JPEG, and on the other hand, the good rate distortion performance, high functionality, but also high complexity performance of JPEG 2000. So actually, this JPEG XR fitted nicely in the middle, and there was a hope, and especially by some companies, that this standard would actually be replacing the old JPEG standard. But it didn't happen yet. Because of which reason? Because it was not plugging into well in the whole end-to-end system. If your camera manufacturers and your printer manufacturers and so on are not buying into this technology, coding standards will not survive. And so this made that this standard was not so successful in the marketplace. I'm going to skip this slide in view of time because I was told that we have to kind of reduce the time spent on the presentation, so I'll quickly move to this part. Now, an important activity, and I think especially for your community, this is an interesting one, is GP Search. So GP Search is actually a search framework that was developed within the JPEG committee that is focused on querying image databases, but across different systems. So basically, the systems allow you to launch a query, which is crossing different repositories, going to different repositories, using the query language of each of those individual repositories, but translating it to a generic query language, which is defined in the GP Search standard. So there's a whole framework that is being defined here. So what we didn't define in here are, for example, explicit metadata formats and so forth. Now we just adopt existing metadata formats, but we can specify them in our query. And the framework specifies also how, in a JPEG image file or a JPEG 2000 image file, you can embed this type of data. And so typically in JPEG, and I will come back to that, you use your app marker segments like you do for EXIF and so forth. So that's part of the code stream. So that contains all the image-related information. And so in an app marker segment, you can store your metadata. That's technically how it happens without going into too much details. And in JPEG 2000, you have a similar system, but there you have typically what is called UUID boxes, and in there, actually, you store all your metadata. So these are the two mechanisms that are being used to store that that information. But the whole GP Search framework is actually quite an interesting framework because it really is designed to increase the interoperability between different repositories so that you can search across different repositories and so forth. And the framework allows you also to specify the ontologies to do the translation between different metadata formats. So that's also something that's supported. And these ontologies, of course, we could not specify them all ourselves. You can register them via GP Search Registration Authority such that they can automatically be consulted and people can actually adopt the necessary functionality in their applications. So an important framework where the standardization has more or less finalized now. Now, what is in progress? So we have one activity which is called Advanced Image Coding, which is especially, though the title suggests differently, because originally it was the intention to come up also with new image coding technologies, but it merely focuses on the evaluation of coding technologies, so design of quality metrics, quality assessment procedures of images, and so forth. So everything is being specified within that framework. That is JPEG AR. That's a new activity. It's a very new one. And so we are in an early process of the standardization there, but there the idea is to provide or to include functionality for augmented reality applications in the JPEG standard. Now, what is very important to understand here is that we are not defining new functionalities or technologies here. The only thing we want to do there is to be able to embed relevant information in the JPEG files and JPEG 2000 files that are supporting AR application, and there it ends. So it doesn't go further than that. So just taking care that the right metadata and so forth can be signaled, that the hooks are there, that JPEG such that JPEG standards can be used in the context of augmented reality applications. JPEG Systems is a larger activity which tries to come up with a whole system layer, a uniform file format specification for all JPEG standards, because if you would be analyzing all the JPEG standards that have been produced over the last 20 years and you start comparing the different file formats that are in use, you will see that there is a lot of variety existing among those file formats, and in terms of interoperability, this is not the proper thing to do, especially also if you want to make the different standards you are producing yourself as a standardization body interoperable. So JPEG Systems has a task to come up with a system layer for all the standards, including a file format and so forth. And then we have JPEG XT, which is one of our newest standards, which is focusing on high dynamic range imaging, because this is the new type of imaging that's popping up these days, I mean, where you have higher dynamic rates, and which is especially in the context of photography and so forth, but also digital cinema, and a very important technology. And I will go a bit deeper into that. So I mentioned before already for JPEG XT that GP Search that you have different ways to single metadata in your file format. And so typically this is done via your app marker segments. So here you see a number. So for example, EXIF data, where APTC data is included, is typically singled in an app marker segment. Now the nice thing is such an app marker segment from a decoder point of view, a JPEG decoder, it will look to the file format, it will examine which app marker segments are there, and then it will check whether it has the functionality, the software on board to interpret that information. So typically every JPEG decoder will of course be able to interpret an app marker segment containing EXIF data, so that's by default the case. But there are a number of app marker segments which are not yet defined or not being used that common. And a JPEG decoder that encounters such an app marker segment and doesn't have the functionality on board to interpret what's happening there will just ignore the information in that segment. So that means that you can single actually information in such an AppMarker segment that can only be used by a JPEG decoder that has some additional functionality on board. So it's very important to understand this concept because a lot of the new things we're now doing in the committee are based on this principle. So you can, for example, in the case of JPEG XT, what you will do is you will single information in there related to the high dynamic range character of your single. So JPEG typically supports 8-bit images, so 8 bits per color component. If you want to go to 16-bit images or higher, so coarsely set, the highest or the lowest 8 bits, they are being singled in this additional AppMarker segment. Now what will happen then is that a JPEG decoder that is HDR capable will also read the information that's present in that AppMarker segment. In this particular case, it will be an LP11 marker segment, and be able to decode the image for the full dynamic range. Now, if you have a regular JPEG decoder, that JPEG decoder will only interpret the part it can understand, and it will ignore that the information that's signaled in this LP11 marker segment. And in that way, only will decode a low dynamic range or a classical JPEG image. Now, the nice thing of this procedure is that the whole end-to-end chain, all the legacy software that's around on the market and so on, will keep on functioning. It will not crash based on the fact that you're signaling a JPEG image that has HDR capabilities. They will just interpret the low dynamic range part, actually, of that signal. So that's a very important concept to understand. And in that way, we can support HDR functionality. The nice thing of this approach is also that it actually... in that way, enables as well forward as backward compatibility. So in the two directions, so newer technologies and older technologies stay compatible and don't run into problems. The way the codec is being built is shown here, but I'm not going to go into details here. But basically, your legacy decoder is your base layer that is producing actually your classical JPEG file. And the enhancement layer and taking care of all the high dynamic range functionality and so forth, that's also being encoded using a classical JPEG, for most of the parts is also classical JPEG encoder technology plus some additional functionality, and that's being signaled and the result of that in the AppMarker thing. So it's actually a two-layered system, and that has as a nice advantage also that all solutions that you have, also hardware solutions, can actually be reused. So you can reuse the hardware that is existing, and you only have to add a little bit of functionality. So in terms of hardware cost and so on, this is actually also quite minimal. So it's a very neat design. It's being used nowadays already. The first part is being standard is finished. And for example, in the digital cinema markets, one is using this. So Dolby has, for example, HDR grading screens to be used on the movie sets, film sets, and so this technology is actually already embedded in those screens. And what you see also is in the cinema markets that new productions are more and more actually being HDR productions. So the market really in that, so for digital cinema, really jumped on this technology. So this is really going to boost enormously in the coming years. Okay, and here you see an overview of the status of the different parts of the standard. What's maybe interesting to mention too here is that in this standard, we have support for lossless and near lossless coding as well. So that means what was always a shortcoming of the JPEG standard, that when you were taking a picture with your camera and stored it in JPEG format, that this was lossy by default. And if you want to have the original data, you had to store it in RAW format. Now, if a camera would implement this JPEG XT technology, and so it's not so much additional complexity, so it will be easy for the manufacturer. It will be able to support also lossless coding. So we will have JPEG files potentially in the future that support both lossless and lossy coding in one file. There was only one little technical problem there. So to make it lossless, you need to specify which, there is a mathematical transform, a DCT transform, which is used in a JPEG coder. There are many different implementations possible. We had to specify which transform that needs to be used. So we used the one that is commonly used so that we're sure that everybody is using the same, but there might be some little pitfalls. Now, when speaking about the errors you're making there, are rounding errors. We're not speaking about huge errors that are being made if you would be using in your implementation another transform. So, but the good news is here that there is a solution in preparation, and the standard will be ready early next year that supports lossless coding for JPEG as well in a very smooth way. And alpha channel coding will be offered as well. Okay, so I'm going to stop my first part of my presentation here. I don't know whether there are any questions at this stage.
A simple question about the JPEG search. For what exactly can be searched?
What do you mean, what exactly can be searched?
What are the search terms? So is this only metadata in the very end to say, okay, about pictures of this type? Or can it be also, let's say, visual patterns you can search for?
In principle, it can be anything, because we actually adopt the features from other specifications. So it's kind of translation mechanism. It's a framework. It's a framework. So that's why it's so interesting, because it's not, I mean, beforehand taking immediately a huge space, like I was saying about the big Lego block. It's not a big Lego block. It's a small thing, but it allows you to create more interoperability between different systems. And so in that context, it's quite an interesting technology. So we try to keep it as simple as possible. Other questions? If not, then I'm going to give the floor to Andrea so that he can talk about it from another perspective.
Okay, so that's me again. My role in JPEG is to act as a liaison between the JPEG standard association and the industry. So one of the reasons why I'm here today is to bring to the attention of photographers, stock agencies, end users, and commercial people in general, including, of course, also software houses, camera manufacturers, and so on, the attention of the importance of JPEG today. So JPEG is not dead, as it was shown before by Peter. There are several initiatives active today, and my presentation this afternoon will be the status of JPEG today, JPEG in the commercial sector, JPEG in the research sector, JPEG and I will say the cultural heritage and save our memory environment, which is something where I think also my friend, another friend, Sora, I'm sure will appreciate, and JPEG tomorrow. So what is next? So JPEG today, JPEG started in 1992 when it became publicly available. Over 3 million pictures have been created in JPEG, and more images are taken, as we know, on a daily basis and are popular on the most well-known social networks and also commercial and public websites. JPEG is very used in different applications, also in the industry, and is, of course, used in the commercial and in the private and personal sector as well. To go into a specific, in the commercial sector, according to Facebook, over 200 million images are uploaded online daily, and according to 1000memories.com website, every year over 400 billion pictures are taken. So because based on InfoTrends, Statista, other websites, over 75% of online content is available on JPEG format, you understand that those numbers actually are very important also in the stock licensing and in the industry. In the commercial sector, of course, JPEG and TIFF are the mostly used file format. From a photographic point of view, as I told you, I'm going to address different group of people in my presentation. So in photography, people are still shooting a lot in recent days in RAW format, but we know that RAW is not the best solution for long-term preservation and longevity of the files, because RAW change in terms of version quite frequently. So for libraries and for preservation policy, it is always better to look for a system that is more stable, that is, of course, backward compatible. And RAW is not, as today, doesn't meet this requirement. From personal point of view, as it was also mentioned again by Peter, JPEG 2000 was and is probably the best file format available in the market today, because of course it's lossless, but provide a lot of interesting features about security, about privacy, error resilience, region of interest. So it's perfect in a medical application, it's perfect for security, for privacy, but also for archiving purposes. And at the same time, it can compress the images very much, and if even some data or pixel are lost, with JPEG 2000 you can still be able to open up the file without downloading again the file because the poor internet connection line. So this again is very interesting. However, as Alinari but also other archive have noticed in the recent years, JPEG 2000 has not been very popular in the photo archive industry. Alinari has done its own beta testing site with JPEG 2000 images between 2000 and 2005, but unfortunately, because Internet Explorer, Safari and other popular applications didn't support natively JPEG 2000, and they had to people had to download the plugin to visualize the file. This was not considered by us, but also by other photo archives, the best way to preserve and to display your content online. Personally, I think that this is a failure in the industry. I still very strong advocate, and I try to evangelize JPEG 2000 as the best solution for long-term preservation, for commercial usage. But as today, as I told you, there are some limitations, which I will say some are related to some issues related to IPR, but others, I think, are more political rather than technical issues. So JPEG 2000 is still popular in medical, archiving, broadcasting, security, and the movie industry. There are some advantages by using JPEG versus GIF versus PNG, and on the right side of this slide there is a list of features that are good and bad for these three very popular online file formats. JPEG in the research sector. So JPEG, of course, is very popular in the research, in the university, and in the R&D level community. For this reason, for example, a new update, and Peter mentioned so many areas that JPEG is working today, are very up-to-date today with file optimization, backward compatibility, which is definitely very important. Again, if we work on long-term preservation, file optimization, which is again very important when you work with big terabyte or petabyte of files. Data integrity, metadata support, which, you know, we go back to square one, to the morning session with the IPTC, and the concern that some software strip away the metadata information. So all this discussion about the preservation of the authenticity, the file, and also the original metadata information are considered very well, not only by the IPTC photo metadata group, but also in the JPEG community as well. So for this aspect, in 3 weeks, if you stay here, if you can hold, or you have to return, there will be the next meeting on June 25th, 24 to 26 in Warsaw at the Marriott Hotel. So talking about JPEG and the long-term preservation, and we call the Save Our Memory Plan, JPEG is the de facto very popular format in the digital photography. And as I mentioned before, most cameras today capture files in JPEG format. So the activity that JPEG is doing today is very important because, as I mentioned in this previous slide, the data security, IPR, licensing, personal privacy are definitely issues that are also very, very important when you run your own archive, your photographic collection. At the same time, the metadata and the information to detect forged images, for example, in forensic image analysis for police investigation, for example, are considered and are used in the metadata field in JPEG. So JPEG contain a lot of information, not only about the photo itself, but also about, for example, the scanner or the digital camera that you are using. And all this information, again, are very relevant. We talk today, for example, about geotagging, a high dynamic range, and all this information about, for example, the location, the lens that you're using can be very useful also when you do your search, where you can add additional field for searching and retrieving your data. So the EXIF information that will preserve all this information, of course, are very important. And again, the issue that was mentioned by Michael before about the risk that some softwares or some operating systems actually will remove those information, will strip away those metadata or EXIF information from the file, actually can create a big danger in your ecosystem. And this is why we work very hard to discuss, to talk directly to Adobe, to Apple, to the Android, to Microsoft community, to make sure that all this information remain, because they are considered integral part of the file. Okay? This is very, very important. So when we talk about long-term preservation, the three best solutions to recommend, still recommend today, of course, are TIFF, JPEG, and JPEG 2000. My recommendation for you, if you ask me, Andrea, which one to use, of course, it depends about your business. Who are your clients? What is your business model? I'm not here to tell you to change completely your business, but I will say that there are also tools where you can provide more than one file format for your end users and make these conversions also available on the fly. If you're looking again on a specific difference between JPEG and TIFF, this is a short list which I made, and you can compare yourself and you can judge again which one is better again for your business and your company objective. Again, I'm not here to tell you that TIFF is better. It depends a lot about your business workflow. JPEG tomorrow, and this is my last slide. I really want to stress that we are looking and we are encouraging the CPIC Association and people in this room to put a lot of effort and interest not only on the IPTC photo metadata, but also on the JPEG and the presentation that we're making this afternoon. We see a lot of cross links, a lot of opportunities between the two initiatives, the two associations. And we think that as a JPEG advocate, I would like to see more industry, more stock agencies, more photographers actively involved in JPEG. Today, the JPEG is driven, I would say, mostly by research. So my recommendation and my work as a JPEG representative is also actually to encourage and to push people not to jump down to the floor, but actually to join this wonderful consortium. There are wonderful people, not really like me, but like Peter. You will see a lot of benefit by joining this very nice community. Also, remember, we are not. This is not a dead association. We are specifically putting a lot of interest and research on a high dynamic range, georeference, metadata. So we are really facing the latest innovation, the latest research, the latest tools available in the market when we are talking about digital imaging. Last but not least, JPEG again is not a mammoth. Is not an old. Giant sitting back and relax. We are also watching what's happening in the market. In the market, there are tools available from the industry to provide their own solution for JPEG compression. I just mentioned here several for your reference. I won't tell you today if Image Optim is better than Topaz JPEG, although Topaz is considered one of the most popular in the photographic industry. However, I will tell you that as a JPEG person, we also put a lot of attention and we watch what's happening also in the commercial market. We talk, you know, to the vendors to try to synchronize our effort with what happened in the industry. So thank you so much for your attention. And now I pass the microphone again to Peter to conclude the rest of the presentation. Thank you so much.
Kindly asked to move a bit faster so that the next speaker who has to catch a plane can start in time, so I will speed up a little bit. So I mentioned that actually in my first part of the presentation that you have a number of nice tools that allow you to add additional functionality to JPEG code stream. And so besides adding HDR functionality, lossless functionality, one of the things you can do is add actually privacy functionality or IPR functionality to a JPEG file format without breaking legacy decoders. And so that is what this JPEG privacy is actually targeting at. It's targeting at coming up with solutions that will allow you to embed actually in your JPEG file. You can do that to a certain extent now already, to embed this kind of information such that when you're decoding the information and you have access to that type of information, you can take appropriate measures. So I will move into that immediately. So what you basically want to do is find ways, for example, to encrypt your metadata and to encrypt your image data fully or partially. So that's what I'm going to show you on the next slide. And we use the same mechanism there. We use our upmarker segments. We take one that is not being used and we embed in there, for example, encrypted information. Because if you would encrypt your basic stream or basic metadata, which can be accessed by a JPEG legacy decoder. You put that in your one marker segment, a JPEG legacy decoder will just crash. So you have to avoid that. So what you're going to do that, for example, is put that in a marker segment that is not interpretable by a classical JPEG legacy decoder, and then it will not crash. It will just ignore that information. And so that's what you see here. So you have your regular APWAR marker segment containing your EXIF data that can be accessed. And then you take an APWAR marker segment and you put all the metadata there you want to encrypt. This can be also part of your EXIF metadata. For example, your geospatial information, geolocation information. You can say, I want to have this encrypted because I don't want everybody to be able to consult it. We all know, I think this committee is certainly aware of it, few people already ended up in prison because the FBI was capable of interpreting and using actually this geolocation information from pictures that were taken at certain locations. So with this system, you will be able to encrypt it, to store it in a regular JPEG file. All the JPEG decoders will be able to decode it, legacy decoders. And if you have the additional functionality on board and you have the right encryption keys, you can also use that, read that information. The same is true also for the image data. So you can protect certain amount of your image data, certain region in the image, or you can protect it fully and just embed another image also in your file that will be decoded by a JPEG legacy decoder. And we have the decryption key. You can just decode a completely different image as well, to give an extreme example. So that is feasible without breaking the standard. So you can, for example, imagine that you upload on Facebook a picture which is totally different content for everybody looking at the picture, but you give your friends the decryption key, and then your friends will actually be able to decode the real image and not the fake one that is shown actually to the world. So these are mechanisms that are possible with this technology.
Yes? Sure. One
low res, high res. So if you think in an IPR context, what you can do is you can, so that's one of the functionalities we could embed because we're working on the standard now. At this moment, we are just collecting use cases and requirements. But what we could foresee is, for example, that you can embed 10 versions of your image, one that is consultable by everybody, and then different versions with different quality levels and so forth, with different IPR usage rules. And then in that way, exploit that information. So that's why I wanted to stress on this, because I think it's very important for also the things you're thinking at currently in this context. So that's feasible. And so you get on a whole system where regular decoding will just only take the regular information, decode it, and when you have a JPEG privacy equipped decoder with this additional functionality, you can actually decode the additional information. And so that's very interesting. Now, in the context of this, what is also very important, I have to go fast, but is that there are people, for example, this is a scheme produced by the Polytechnical University of Barcelona. So there are schemes available that describe how, with a third-party system, you can take care of actually supporting different policies, registering the policies related to a particular image, related to a specific image identifier, also storing who has access, under which conditions, at which time, for example, where, which group, and so forth, so that can be stored as well. And that was mentioned this morning too. If over time, for example, those policies would change, the owner of that content only has to go to the policy service and actually say, look, my policy has changed. This is the new policy. So over time, you can, for example, decide to change your policies related to certain image data and so forth. So the message I want to give here is that actually technically, a lot of the things that are on the table that we would desire to have are actually possible. So the real question is, okay, where to standardize those? So from a JPEG perspective, we're not going to standardize this framework. What we will do is take care that the JPEG stream is actually supporting the necessary functionality in order to use a JPEG file in such a framework. So this is about the small Lego blocks I was talking about in the beginning. Just the tiny things which are really needed to make it working in such an environment. Other bodies, other organizations have to take care of this scheme. And I think you as a committee has also to check, okay, what role can we play in such a framework? So that's one of the things I certainly want to mention. And I think offline we can further discuss about this. But it would be nice to have IPTC. IPTC is actually has a liaison with the JPEG committee to actually reactivate this liaison and have some more intense discussion about this. Okay, good. I'm going to move forward because I have 5 minutes left, I see. So to give the floor to the next speaker. Now, what is coming too, and I shortly mentioned it before already, images are going to be more than just 2D. So we are really moving to a situation where we get new types of cameras that are immediately, for example, registering 3D representation of the environment. There are also recording techniques where you are actually recording multiple images, and then later on you're doing all kinds of nice things with those 3D images. I'm going to give a few examples in the next slides without going too much in detail. So we move really there from what we all know as panoramic pictures, 360-degree pictures, to spatial photographs over light fields and holography, and I will give a few examples of those in the next slides. So spatial photography, maybe you have seen this application from Fuse. It's a Swedish company. And so what you do there is with your mobile phone, you just take pictures and you're moving around the subject of which you're taking pictures. And then afterwards you get actually rendering of that object in 3D. I don't know whether we will see quickly an example of this. So you can see here the example that you get immediately a 3D representation. You can find this movie on the website of this company, so I will, in view of time, move on. But it's one of the things you can do. And so that also requires you to think of an image not only about in the context of, this is only one image, it can be a set of images you have to process. So that creates a lot of additional problems but also a lot of additional opportunities in how to consume those images. Another nice example is the usage of point clouds. So you have big laser scanners with which you can scan whole environments. So that's what you can see here. And this is a very, very nice example of the Science Museum in London. They put such a laser scanner in an old, in one of their galleries, which they are going to actually remove, but they wanted to store this for historical purposes. So they scanned the whole area. So it's an area with all models of ships and so on. So it's a very high-resolution data set. It's going to be made publicly available, existing out of points. And as you can see there, you have a 3D representation of all the objects which are there at a very high resolution. So you can think about this if you have this kind of data sets that later on, when you want to reproduce them, you go to a 3D printer, and then you print your own ship or other things. So as a committee, we're currently looking into how can we standardize or we can define coding technologies that are actually addressing this kind of data sets. So that's one. Another area that's popping up is light field photography. So we all know companies like Raytrix and Lytro and so forth, which are creating cameras where you put an additional lens array on top of your CCD. And so that allows you, when you take one picture, you immediately take pictures from different angles. Now, the nice thing about this technology is that, and I'll play the movie in the meanwhile, the nice thing about this technology is that you take a picture and the picture is actually a volume. So you capture the scene is actually volume, you capture the whole scene. And only afterwards, when you start processing the data, you can decide which viewing angle you take exactly. You can play with the focal distance at that moment, at reconstruction moment, as you can see here. Or you can make such dynamic reconstructions, because if you have a landscape, you can just zoom into the landscape and so forth. So if you're going to reproduce those pictures, you will be able, if you have an application platform, this or an application for this, also to take care that you can actually play with different focal distances and so forth. There's a lot of interest for standardizing technology in this area, and this is one of the things we're going to launch in this year. Videos can be found as well on the website of those companies, so just go there and look at it. And then a final thing is holography. You might say, oh, holography, this is really has been around already for a long time, but we didn't see really very nice solutions. Now, it's true for the markets you're currently addressing, holography will still take a few years. Between, let's say, 10 years from now, we will have quite nice holographic displays and so on. So the technology is getting ready. The only problem with this type of data is that they are huge in volume. And so it's also a different way of looking to the data. When you look to light field displays, you're looking to light as rays. In holography, you look to light as waves. And so that's you enter in the physics area there, and it's a totally different way to handle the data. But this technology is getting there. And for example, in microscopy, it's used already. That's why in the JPEG community, we are starting to look into how to compress holographic data. And so we have some nice solutions for that already in-house, and so we're trying to see how we should standardize those. So there are a lot of challenges coming up, and I'm sorry I cannot go deeper into this in view of time. But one of the things you have to realize too, if you get the data in such a volumetric format, so if you want to reproduce them, there is a whole new landscape that's opening of how you can reproduce the data. If you think about 3D printing and so forth, you can print actually a picture as a 3D entity instead of actually a flat image. So you can, for example, also try to, when you were printing even old pictures, try to reconstruct the texture and so on also of that picture. And so there are people thinking in this area too. So it's, there are other business opportunities than just the classical 2B printing markets we currently have. And so you will see in the coming years, I think, a lot of businesses popping up that are jumping onto this. And that's what I also was saying, okay, it's potentially a new disruptive evolution because it's going to be a totally different way we're going to handle images. So that's the next shift. We went from analog to digital, stay 2D. Now we're going to move to another area where it's going to be 3D, and the ways we're going to reproduce images are going to be completely different. We had some brainstormings on this in some European projects, and one of the ideas that came out is print your own Christmas tree, where all the objects in the Christmas tree are based on pictures. You have your own pictures, so the balls which are containing a picture and so on. So just one of the ideas you can think about. So I think your creativity and inspiration is the limit to this. Okay, so what I just want to make is one last slide, is make some publicity about this whole area that is starting up. We have, like it was announced by Andrea already, we have a workshop during our JPEG meeting at the Warsaw meeting within 3 weeks from now. People from different areas will be speaking there, and the goal of this workshop is to collect use cases, ideas about what are the technologies that are around, requirements, and so forth. So it's going to be quite an interactive meeting. So if you are still around in that period, it's free, so you're welcome to join that meeting. Okay, so to conclude, just some take-home messages. So one very important one is that we didn't finish or we didn't stop with maintaining our JPEG standard. No, on the contrary, actually the functionality that's being offered via the JPEG standard is being further improved and expanded. So that's very important. IPR and privacy is really a very important thing we're looking into these days. So and there also I think we need to collaborate as groups. The new imaging modalities I addressed. And then I would say, okay, visit our website regularly, because on there you will see regularly announcements on calls for collaboration, proposals, and so on in those contexts. We have also, in between the meetings, often video calls for each of those groups, which can be attended by everyone. So if you register on the mailing lists, which are announced on our website, you can get more information. So if you don't find that information, you can contact me or the convener of our committee. The slides will be distributed, so you will get actually all the information. And so we can bring you into touch with the right people and tell you where you have to subscribe on the mailing lists and so forth. And I would like to thank also, to conclude, a number of people that have been contributing to these slides. And so that ends also my presentation.